Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Time now for the political panel here at RCR. It's Friday morning. Always look forward to this because it's a lot of fun. We learn things and we get to express ourselves. Jill Ovens is on the panel for the first time. Morning, Jill. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning. Hi.
Tell me about you leaving the Labor Party.
Well, I was becoming disillusioned with the party hierarchy not listening to women's issues over these issues in relation to transgender ideology, but other issues as well. And so when it came to Albert Park in March 2023, I was really disgusted with comments made by Michael Woods, who was a leading cabinet minister at the time.
The River of Filth guy. Let's not forget that.
Hmm. Yeah, and I actually blamed the Labor Party for the fact that the police were so useless and just hung around the edges. I didn't even know that there were any police there. And so I was furious about it. And also, you know, to the way the Greens leadership acted as well, that Marama Davidson made it all about her. And they were all there supporting the violence, absolute violence against us. And so anyway, that night I wrote to the Labor Party and said I was resigning. And I thought, oh, what do I do now? You know, because I can't vote for either Labor, and I certainly wouldn't vote for the Greens. So anyway,
I
who said that?
No, sorry.
So you started up the Women's Rights Party, right? That's what you did.
Yeah, in conversation with a couple of other people who felt the same way as me. And we thought, oh, well, maybe we just don't vote, but then nobody would know. So anyway, we started the Women's Rights Party the following week, and we were registered the 28th of August, 2023, just before the election. We got 750 members, actually, but we only needed 500.
Cool. That's really cool. I know who said that. It was Marty Gibson. He said National. Hi, Marty. How are you?
Sorry.
Hi. No, I wouldn't vote for National. Sorry, Marty.
I didn't either, Jill. It was just a thought. Hi, Paul. How you doing?
Nice to have you. And Simon O'Connor, speak free. Hi, Simon.
Hey, good to be on. I can admit to having voted National in the last election, but thanks for having me on early, Paul, so I'm all raring to go for my show in an hour or so's time.
You're warming up. This is a warm-up for you. The warm-up act. Okay, let's start. And Jill, you first up. Oh, this story about menstruation advice. What's this about? Why is that on your mind?
Well, I've been involved as a union leader in the health sector for about 20 years now. And, you know, it's been in the news all over the last week about how they're in crisis. They're always in crisis, I could tell you that. I don't remember a time ever when they weren't. But in the midst of this crisis, just last week, Health New Zealand, Te Whatu Ora, which is took over from the DHBs, it's not the Ministry of Health, it's the biggest employer of women in this country because it employs all the nurses and women doctors, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, they've got this policy, a gender diversity policy, as an employer for how the employees should act and how gender diverse people should be protected. Now, this sort of work was being done by DHBs prior to Health New Zealand, but it's just emerged as a Health New Zealand policy. And something new in it that took my eye was a definition of menstruation. And what it says is that menstruation or a period is part of many people's lives.
Many.
For some trans and gender diverse people, getting their period is a normal and okay part of being in their body. For others, it's uncomfortable and even an actively distressing experience. Well, I can tell you that many women find it quite distressing too if they get caught out. Anyway, it goes on to say having a period is not a feminine thing. And people of all genders menstruate, including non-binary people, agender people, and even plenty of men.
Blow me down.
I know what they're talking about, probably. They're talking about women who identify as men, but then if they're doing that and they're taking cross-sex hormones, testosterone, they won't be getting periods anyway.
Yeah, but so what's the big deal?
It just, you know, it just blew my mind. But the main objection to that gender diversity policy is that it actually says that in the binary bathrooms, that's what it calls it, binary bathrooms, it doesn't actually specifically say changing rooms, but presumably it covers that as well, that women workers access in order to get changed into their uniforms, that people who are gender diverse, i.e. men who are identifying as women, can use those because they need to be able to access the bathrooms of their gender. Too bad for the women who might not want to be.
Yeah. Why call them bathrooms? There are no baths in there.
No, I know. It's not a word that we use in New Zealand. And they actually leave out changing rooms. And the funny thing is, well, not funny, but in the UK, there's a group of nurses who had a trans-identifying man coming into their changing rooms, and he was actually leering at them. He was saying to them, when are you going to get changed? And watching them as they got changed.
Oh,
so
crikey.
They twice complained to the HR, and they got told they need to just get over it and be more inclusive and go to re-education. And so they're now suing the NHS over this. But the tenor of this gender diversity policy that Health New Zealand's put out is that if you don't like it, too bad, you have to go and get re-educated. You have to go along with it.
Boy, they've really bought it, haven't they? What do you think, Simon, Marty?
Well, it was interesting that the employees are required to, and this is a quote from the policy, support and engage in organisational initiatives and opportunities that improve people's understanding of diversity and how we can be more inclusive. And as I read this, it's just so typical of the way that diversity means sameness. And inclusion means exclusion of
anyone
who
disagrees.
Mm. And engagement means shut up and accept what we're telling you to do. And tolerance means putting up with the intolerable. Or else in kindness, well, we found out what kindness meant and the nature of truth and all that. So, yeah, I don't know if you're pattern recognition sort of people, but it's sort of more of that black mass kind of thing, that reversal that's so important to a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I'd echo exactly what Marty's saying. I mean, these are just absurdities, and if you don't go along with them, they're going to force your hand. Re-education camps, struggle sessions in a way. I mean, they can call them codes of conduct and all sorts of things, but you're going to be forced to think in a singular way while they hypocritically talk the other way around. But the other thing I'd add, and Jill touched on it at the start, is we have a health system that's always under pressure and in crisis. And we know at the moment that, you know, there are staff shortages, there's not enough money to go around. And yet, clearly, there are bureaucrats and officials spending enormous amounts of time and your taxpayer money to write these absurd policy statements around concepts that men can menstruate, which, for the record, they can't.
Yeah, but Jill made the point that they just assume that a female transitioning to men are men. So that's what they mean.
Yeah,
oh, that's what they mean.
This is a health sector. They should know that no matter how many, how much you wear dresses and how many cross-sex hormones you take, a man can never be a woman and a woman can never be a man. It's just biologically not possible.
There seems to be a huge lack of self-awareness amongst the bureaucrats. They don't realise that we all think it's nutty.
Oh, the other thing is that we discovered that wording is word for word, cut and paste from a New South Wales resource for transgender and diverse people. It's called TransHub. It's actually word for word. They just lifted it out of a resource that's by an NGO that's already captured, well, it's set up to promote the ideology.
Cut and paste.
Absolutely, word for word.
That's so lazy. Minimum lazy, anyway.
But it's also quite global, isn't it? I mean, one of the things we're often concerned about is just how, if you will, our national sovereignty, our own policies are being so influenced by global bodies. And so this begins to indicate that there's that relationship, for want of a better word, between all these countries influencing one another. So they love it when New Zealand leads on topics, and very happy too when we follow. So I didn't know that from what Jill had said, but I think that's just an absolute shocker.
I note that of the four regional directors that have been put in place by Lester Levy, three of them are Australians. So I expect more of this.
Well, I think we are. Greens use the law they hate, Simon.
Yeah, so they've got that issue with Darlene Tana, so the MP who they want to get out of the party, but the Greens also want her out of Parliament. But to do so, they've got to use something called the waka jumping, or we colloquially call it waka jumping. And long and short, the Greens have fought against that the whole way. They don't believe in it in principle. And actually, there's some good arguments for their position. But now realism, if you will, pragmatism kicks in. They've got a real problem. Darlene ain't leaving. And so they're
turns
having
out
a
they
massive
needed
debate.
It.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So they're doing lots of chats and consultations. But this is a real seeping wound, for want of a better metaphor, for the Greens. It ain't going away. They had hoped she'd leave. But look, this is part of the problem for the Greens. They take very highfalutin moral positions, and, you know, kudos to them, but reality kicks in. And the other side, if I might, they've had quite a number of their Pacifica caucus leave in disgust. They feel, these Green Party members, that the way Darlene Tana is being treated isn't respectful to Pacifica, a Maori woman. They're contrasting it with how Julianne Genta was treated. And so you've sort of got what I call a Leviathan. The Greens are eating themselves. And that's the joy of watching identity politics crumble under its own weight.
I think you mentioned Julianne Genta. She's to be censured, I'm reading from RNZ, and has to apologise over shouting incident. Boy, these Greens are losing it. Don't you think, Marty? They're losing it.
Well, it's been like watching a swimmer psych up to jump into an icy lake, isn't it? Watching them get ready to use the waka jumping bill. Yeah, I mean, they all seem to be personality disordered communists, and it's hard to maintain stability with that kind of foundation. And you know, there's a lot of belief that their principles are going to overcome their will to power, but it's not. I think Bryce Edwards said very accurately that it's a scandal of their own making. There seems to be some flawed processes in their selection process that need addressing. And I mean, it would just be so great if there was a voice for the environment in Parliament.
Do they talk it? They don't really talk about the environment much anymore, do they? The Greens?
No, well, you know, communist countries aren't known for their verdant environments. That's not good. And also, people don't start worrying about the environment until they're over a certain level of thriving economic security.
Right.
So,
okay, yeah.
They're kind of pointing the wrong way, I think.
Jill, bad behaviour from the Greens. How do you explain it?
Well, I can tell you that I don't think for a minute that Elizabeth Kerikeri, who was in the same boat, whose partner is one of the Pacific people who's left the party, by the way, is in any way, shape or form a communist. She spoke at the CTU Women's Conference a couple of years ago. She's absolutely consumed with transgender ideology. And Darlene Tana, I happen to know of some Greens people who are now in our party because they've left in disgust. But she didn't have any sort of political belief system, as far as I was told, when she presented to the members to get her position on the list. She was only out for herself. So, but what I think is interesting is that the Greens have been putting it out there that they want to be the next biggest party in Parliament, because they're going to win South Auckland. Well, they're not going to win South Auckland without support from Pacific people.
That's gone perhaps now. Yeah,
I would think so. I don't think, I think people are dreaming. That's why Fesso Collins was recruited to the Greens. He was not a Green. He was a Labour Party person for many, many years. but got treated badly during the Auckland mayoralty when he was endorsed by both Labor and the Greens. But I knew FSO, and I think that was their big push to try and win over the Pacific community. But the Pacific community is so loyal to Labor that you couldn't win them over, even with all this transgender stuff that they don't by and large support.
Simon, does their voter base crumble in the face of all of this?
Well, no, actually, this is the strange thing, which somewhat goes beyond expectation or explanation, rather, in that their polling is still holding up. And I think a lot of it is, you know, the people who support the Greens are ideologically that they're completely committed to this social justice agenda and, you know, neo-Marxism, add in whatever you want to describe it as. But you've also got a core base that simply, when they think of the environment, they think Greens. They don't know what the Greens stand for. They don't know what the Greens are even doing. They probably couldn't name the party leader.
Doesn't matter.
They just, you know, you talk economy, people think National. Talk, I don't know, care and the worker, people think Labor. Think environment, think Green. And that's how a lot of people seem to vote.
Yeah, well, just a few years ago, can I just say that I used to be in the Alliance. And in the Alliance, we had the New Labor Party, the Greens, Mana Mota Hake, and a couple of other parties. The Greens in those days were led by Jeanette Fitzsimons and Rod Donald, who I actually had a lot of time for. I wasn't in the Greens Party ever, but they did focus on not just the environment, but social justice issues as well, but nothing like the Greens of today. It's been a sad loss.
They've been taken over, have they? They've been taken over, the Greens.
Yeah. They're captured in the same way that Labor got captured too.
Oh, gosh, everyone's getting captured, it seems. Speaking of the environment, Marty, Air New Zealand.
Yeah, they've abandoned, scrapped their 2030 carbon emissions reduction targets. They did that, I think, on Tuesday. Basically, their planes are too new, so they're not going to be replacing them anytime soon with electric planes, which aren't really that practical at this stage.
It's decades away, I'm telling you.
Yeah, this is your wheelhouse very much, isn't it, Paul? But yeah, there's not as much alternative fuel, and it's expensive, and there's challenging regulatory and policy settings. So yeah, this has made international news, and a lot of other airlines will be watching it carefully. But eventually people have to do the numbers on the amount of energy that fossil fuels provide and contrast it with the difficulty of getting energy from green sources, which, by the by, are always made with fossil fuels themselves. There's no green energy that's made with green energy yet anyway. So, and, you know, this is Luxon probably, I mean, he left in 2019, I think, didn't he? But and this was
He signed them up for it, right?
Yeah, he signed them up. And I remember him, he said a few odd things. I remember one very odd thing he said was, we're fixated on zero carbon by 2050. I thought, fixated? That's a strange word. You want to do it even if it's not practical or sensible?
I wonder what else he's fixated on then.
Yeah, but yeah, there's it has been, as I said, getting a bit of commentary around the world, and I mean, most vocal supporters of the climate fetish, I think, are either paid to do so or completely ignorant of the way the climate works. In terms of what a tiny proportion of effect CO2 has. And one of my favorite tricks is to ask people who are right into it, if you could, would you cut the atmospheric level of CO2 in half? And they always say, yes. And like, well, plants die when that happens. So,
yeah, I know. That's always a gotcha, Marty. Very clever.
Well, climate-related disaster death, we always hear about that. It's decreased by 98% over the last century.
Yeah, so, that's right.
You know, I mean, it's not that I want my view exclusively on the media, just 50%, just the way I don't want 100% more freedom and less government voices on media, just less than the 80% of left media we've got now.
I tell you what I'd like from Air New Zealand, more competitive airfares. Because they are top dollar. I never fly them. They're too expensive all the time.
Well, that's the idea.
Running on time would be good.
I think it's, you know, people want to hang out in the Coro Club. I don't want that. I just want a cheap fare.
Oh, I like the Coro Club.
Oh, yeah. You meet people, right, Marty? You meet people. You bump into people.
Oh, I just like the muffins.
Okay, well, that's a very expensive muffin. Okay, back or staying on politics. Well, that's kind of politics because we own half of that, don't we? Still own half of that airline, do we?
Yeah, no, but, you know, there is that move to stop people flying. They really don't like
But how come I get a better deal from an airline owned by Qantas than an airline owned a bit by me?
Well, they're more pragmatic about the use of fossil fuels, Australia, aren't they?
Yeah, mate. All right, ACT accuses Speaker of failing to address racial harassment in Parliament, and I see I'm reading out of stuff here that Karen Chua has been speaking about being bullied at work, and I think she's been very upset, Simon, very upset.
Yeah, and I think rightly so. The attacks on her are pretty personal and pretty nasty, primarily coming from the Māori Party. So it's all around the changes to the Oranga Tamariki Act, what they sometimes reference as Section 7AA, which long and short, at the moment says that culture has to be prioritised as the primary good for the child. And basically this current government wants to reverse that, to say actually the cultural needs of the child should be considered, but actually what's the best thing for the child, period. But that's upset the likes of the Māori Party, the Greens and others, and they've been vicious, including questioning Karen's Māori identity, which is clearly quite important to her. So this is just vile, nasty stuff, which, of course, is coming from the very people who talk about being loving and kind and tolerant and generous, just not to people they disagree with.
Again, that always seems to be the way. What the hell is going on?
Well, I just think it's the duplicity, which is written large and deeply into the nature of identity politics, progressivism in general. I think what's worrying to me is I think most people can see it, but they're too afraid at times to call it out, because, again, to do so comes with a real cost. If I might link back to what Jill was saying earlier, you know, women turned up in a park to talk about being women and got beaten up by a bunch of men. And a lot of people said nothing, shamefully.
Jill, any comment to make about bullying the, I don't know, the culture of Parliament? It should be a nice place to be. Simon, you've been there, you know all about it. But in the end, they're supposed to be setting some sort of example for everybody, aren't they, Jill?
Yeah, well, that's right. And let's go back to Elizabeth Kerikeri and her accidental message that went out to a whole lot of people instead of just the one she attended it, where she called Chloe a crybaby.
But that's nothing major. I mean, gosh, really?
I know, but there is a history of really bad attacks, particularly on women MPs. But yeah, anybody that disagrees is getting a. It's partly about social media, isn't it? People feel they can say all sorts of things they would never say to somebody in person. But it's a nasty, nasty place. And so I was kind of glad that the Women's Rights Party didn't get enough votes to send me to Wellington.
Yeah. You might need sort of counselling or some sort of, time out somewhere, or it might have been bad for your mental health.
Well, that's right. They all seem to claim mental health issues when they get caught shoplifting really expensive clothes, or they smash into a car after getting drunk. And
can I say that the women seem to be particularly badly behaved?
I know. I've got a T-shirt that says a woman's place is in the house, and it's got a picture of the beehive on it. But now people don't want to buy that T-shirt.
You need one that says there's no political capital to be had by imposing accountability on women.
Yeah, it's not a good look, I got to say. Right?
No.
Let's be honest.
No, it's... I think it's almost getting worse. I mean, that's just anecdotal. I haven't done the research, but you know what? There's just a lot of this going on, a change of language, much more personal, abusive, which is really sad in and of itself. But I might add, this is only a small group. significant but small. You know, I suppose I'm trying to say there's still lots of MPs there who actually speak politely, think clearly. We might disagree with them, but actually are good, honest people. The sad thing is you don't hear about them. It's these ones who, you know, literally dropping F-bombs or crashing cars and claiming this, that one thing, and the other. They get the headlines.
But there's the pushing and shoving. There's the, you know, Julianne Genta, you know, shoving the Wellington retailer, and there's all this bitching about. Something's changed with women.
Well, yesterday in the House on Thursday, Paul, and others will know, it's in the news now, but Julianne Genta had to apologise in the House, and she's been censured. And is it Ingrid Leary had to apologise because she had said something nasty to New Zealand First MP Tania Ankovic? So this seems to be happening more frequently now.
Okay. Marty, you were going to say something.
Well, I went to the Let Kids Be Kids presentation a couple of weeks back, and there was a very interesting concept that they introduced, and I haven't got it in front of me, and I can't remember the professor's name, but it was about identity, and he had a model for identity, and it, at its base, it had humanity, and then it had interests, religion, and carried on until it got to the more very, very individual aspects of ethnicity and then gender and sex. And the contention was, what this professor said was, what we're doing is putting the things up the top of the pyramid and trying to get them as the base. So
yeah, like flipped it.
Yeah, we've flipped it, and it's very unstable. It's causing a massive unhappiness among kids. But I think it's also responsible for this really angry, divisive approach to things. And if you look at the Māori Party, it's an ethno-nationalist party, I think. It's, and they see themselves as at war. And, you know, imagery, you know, has got the guns and it's got the flames, and they talk about revolution, and on some level they really mean it, although they've got kind of soft little hands and skinny arms, and it won't be them spilling the blood.
I was watching Gad Saad on Joe Rogan, you know him?
Yeah.
And he was talking about toxic empathy. Have you heard that term before?
Yeah, I've seen it at work.
I haven't. So can you quickly explain it, put you on the spot?
Well, it's sort of weaponizing empathy. It's kind of hard to explain, and I didn't think I'd be mentioning it.
Women standing with signs in Europe saying, refugees welcome.
Yeah, they think they're being empathetic, but actually they're unlocking the door to great danger and not kind of seeing it.
Yeah, it sort of doesn't match with the get off our land, C-U-N-T signs we faced at Albert Park. But I've just read in a Substack about what you're describing, Marty, sounds a bit like liberal social justice. And they were contrasting that with critical race theory and queer theory, which are breaking us up into subparts and subparts and subparts. So, and then people round on each other. So black women will round on white women and accuse feminists who are white of being privileged and doing something new I hadn't heard before, colorization.
Oh, that's a new one.
And that's a form of colonialism. I know, it's really bizarre, but yeah. So, and colorization is where, as a feminist group, like the Women's Rights Party, we would encourage Māori women to be part of the party. And that would be our attempt to colorize the party.
Oh,
I mean,
golly.
For God's sake, you know.
Yeah.
Well, at the heart of identity politics is division. We're all talking about how it divides people out. And there's only one logical end to division, and that's breakdown and violence. And you are seeing that. You've talked about it, of what's happening in Parliament. Jill and others saw it at Albert Park. We've seen it. I mean, Marty rightly touched on it. You know, the imagery that the Māori parties had up of guns and all. None of this should be a surprise to any listener. If you're down the identity politics route, it's going to end dividing, and division ends badly.
That's why the brakes have to go on, surely, on all of that, before it's too late.
You have to look at the cui bono angle of it as well. And, you know, I always talk about John Tamihere's turnaround from thinking ethno-nationalist race-based politics was a terrible idea, and then now he thinks it's essential. And in between, he's had a a visit to with Chris Hipkins to China. And you know, if you want to make New Zealand a client state, then you know, the ideal way is to disenfranchise the majority of the population by telling them that they don't belong here, and in the same way as they had to defang men by telling them that they were no longer the heads of their families, and it would be better if they just pushed off.
Jill, back to you. Should New Zealand law acknowledge gender identity and expression?
Yeah, well, we don't think so at all. We think that if somebody wishes to wear a dress or whatever in their private life, that's their business. But when it comes to law and policies, you need to be very specific. And there is no specificity about the term gender. It is a feeling. And it doesn't. If you're going to take a case under anti-discrimination law, you need to be able to prove that the discrimination was the result of the prohibited ground, for example, disability or race or sex. All of these are provable and measurable, but gender is not. How would you prove that it was because of your gender that you got the sack from your work? You wouldn't. You wouldn't be able to. And so that's why the other part about it is that our anti-discrimination law, the Human Rights Act, actually has two parts to it. Is they've got the prohibited grounds, but it's also got a whole lot of exceptions that allow for discrimination when it's justifiable. So you can discriminate against in favour of having single-sex housing, for example, hostels, and single-sex spaces and single-sex sport where there is a risk of health and safety. So, and what the Law Commission has put in its review, it's got an argument running through almost all the sex-based exceptions, saying that, arguing for gender to be put in there. And all that will do is pit women's rights to have their own spaces against those of men who wish to identify as women. And what's quite annoying about it is that many of the older men who like to dress up as women, they know very well they're still men. But this new generation have been brought up in school to believe that they could change their sex. And so, no, we don't agree with putting gender identity and expression in there. And Simon, you were talking about how we borrow all this from international jurisdictions. And of course, the wording in the Elizabeth Kerikeri bill that was drawn from the biscuit tin last year, it's been picked up by Te Pāti Māori, is word for word the same wording as was put into the Australian Sex Discrimination Act. But our one has added names and pronouns. So that means that one could be in trouble, be disciplined at work, or even have a case against them in the Human Rights Tribunal for misgendering and or dead naming somebody. Dead naming meaning using their original name.
Oh, I can't believe we're even bloody talking about this.
It's bizarre.
Well, it's an attempt for hate speech laws, ultimately. I mean, no one likes discrimination. You know, there's enough laws in New Zealand that protect people at the moment. If anything like this goes through, then, if you will, sex is going to come crashing into gender. And Jill's touched on it. You know, women's rights, biological women's rights, are going to come headlong crashing into these gender rights. But basically, as I view it, it's just an attempt to create a hate speech law, because what they really mean around this and what the Law Commission's doing is to say that if you won't use someone's pronouns, or you use a different name, or you say, actually, I don't believe you are what you say you are, then you could be up for hate speech. You could be criminalised for that behaviour. And that's, again, that group of people basically trying to use the force of law to force you to change your views. And that should be deeply, deeply worrying to everybody.
And there was an issue of the police recruits being given a steer as to what could be a violation of the concept of hate speech. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, the example was if you said trans women are men, That's hate speech.
The handcuffs are on at that point, are they? Potentially? Could be.
It's a constitutional outrage that the police are doing this. There is no law, okay, repeat, no law in New Zealand passed by this parliament saying that statements like that are illegal.
So
and
what's
yet the
going
police
on
are being trained. Well, the police have decided, because the Royal Commission around the mosque shootings had said we should have something, the police have decided in their own right to start training their officers. They have no right to do so.
The How come all this comes out of one mad guy going crazy?
Are you talking about Costa?
Yeah, well, it's the other mad guy. But it sounds like the, and that's in a way disrespectful, that mosque shooting's been used to leverage a whole lot of things, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And that's disrespectful.
Opportunistically.
Well, selectively, and it's disrespectful because it adds frustrations to the whole thing, which is not appropriate. But, you know, at the end of the day, police are there to enforce the laws that Parliament passes, not make them up. And that's why we should be quite genuinely outraged, not simply that the police could tell you off for saying that there's only two
sexes. I tell you what, I would have a problem with that if they had a go at me.
I don't think I'd have a go at you. Not that I'm a police officer, but
no,
I
but
can
if
tell
someone
not.
Tried to hassle me, like some young. Why have they all got beards? Have you noticed that?
Two different issues, Paul.
they've all got bloody beards now.
I'd like people to know that I'm clean shaven. I just want to say that for the record. Hi, I'm Simon. I'm clean shaven.
Policemen. They all seem, every time I see a young, and I presume they're guys, they've got beards, just say. Maybe there's some connection there. Who knows? I don't know.
It's a bit of a
It's a particular look. You're laughing like I'm crazy, but I'm onto something here.
Yeah.
Well, we not only expect the police to uphold the laws that do exist in New Zealand, but we do expect them to preserve people's right to assemble, which is in the Bill of Rights Act,
yeah, mm-hmm.
To be able to speak in a public place. And we just had an experience recently in Wellington where we brought over a woman called Sal Grover from Australia who's involved in a case called Tickle versus Giggle.
Yeah, we know Sal. Yep.
Yeah, and so we brought her over here because of the Law Commission talking about putting gender identity into our laws. So it was basically for people, not just women, to hear the arguments for or against that. But what happened is that the trans activists in Wellington put it out all over Twitter, more for them, what their plan was, how they were going to disrupt us, how they were going to enter into Rutherford House where the meeting was to be held and make a hell of a noise so that our meeting wouldn't be able to go ahead. And it was quite, we reported to the police on two occasions, first that we were having this meeting and secondly that we had received this information. We found out and they were very nonchalant about the whole thing. And not visible at all. And so we found out from campus security that these trans rights people were entitled to go into Rutherford House and make a hell of a din and disrupt our meeting because they're students and they've got student passes and that the police can't even go into Rutherford House unless Victoria University calls them in. So we actually changed our venue at the last minute and I informed all the ticket holders and told them to come at 5 o'clock to the new venue. And all these trans rights people turned up to Rutherford House and started preparing for their din.
You got them a good one. You got them a good one.
Well, then they went hunting.
Well, that's what you were saying at the start, though, Marty, in terms of they say one thing about being, again, inclusive and tolerant, and yet here they are turning up to an event like Jill's trying to shut them up.
It's bewildering if you have any sort of commitment to telling the truth.
Yeah. Hey, Simon, you got to get ready for your show?
I do. So I'm sorry to duck away.
We'll let you bail.
People can come on a little bit later and hear my voice again. Hey, lovely to chat to you guys. I better roll.
Okay, we'll see you later. Thanks for coming on. So that's Simon O'Connor getting ready for Speak Free. Marty and Jill, Paris Olympics. Any Any thoughts? Opening ceremony?
I'd be interested to hear what Jill thinks first, and it would have been something that you would have watched with interest, I guess, given the trans-heavy nature of it.
Yeah, well, so far. First of all, there was those images all over social media of the trans-identified male, trans woman, they would call themselves, with the Olympic torch, holding onto it with a man. This is an Olympics that's celebrating the first time ever having 50-50 women athletes. And what do? We put two men carrying the torch, and that becomes the image. And then the opening ceremony, I couldn't believe it. It was incredible. And there's this big debate about whether that scene, which some people think is the Last Supper, or some people think is the Greeks' Bacchus celebration. It definitely looked like the Last Supper, but I
looked like the Last Supper to me. Yep.
I can assure you that the 1618 painting that they're referring to, they didn't have a whole bunch of trans people at that table. So anyway, but to make matters worse, we're now facing not the possibility, it's happening right now, I think it's tomorrow, where two male boxers who were not allowed to compete in the Women's World Boxing Championships have been allowed into the Olympics and are going to be punching the hell out of women boxers.
That could go horribly wrong, couldn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely, because even though it's a weight division, like one of them's under 66 kg, he's still, having gone through puberty, much stronger than the women boxers. And, it's just unbelievable. So the 50-50s, thing that's been celebrated, that women make up 50-50 of the Olympic athletes. Well, we don't actually, because two of the women. Two of them are men.
Marty.
Yeah, the boxing is particularly egregious. Nothing talks about inequality like that. And it's so sad, given the commitment of those athletes to preparing for it, to then face someone who's just always going to beat them. I mean, men just have, whether it's 40 or 50% greater upper body strength pound for pound, it's just the way we're built. And it's doesn't bear thinking.
What about that opening ceremony, though? They must have known how it would be perceived. Crikey.
Well, I was going to talk to Simon about this because he wrote a column about it, which was very good. But he and so many people are sheepish about talking about Luciferianism.
No, I thought it was all over the damn show.
The idea of the black mass but it is. There's something deeply satanic about it, particularly that relish with which they push that at children. That creepy interest corrupting innocence. It's
obvious, isn't it? Macron's wife's a guy. Come on.
Well, I've seen some convincing.
Candace Owens is basically same.
That, but I can't tell you positively.
Well, no, but you just know. Come on, Jill.
Oh, I heard the other day that people saying Michelle Obama is a guy. She is not. Michelle Obama is a woman. I don't know about Macron's
wife. I wasn't talking about her, though. I was talking about Macron's
wife. No, I know. But I just think some of these things that go out there over, the media, particularly social media, are just a load of codswallop. You never know whether something's true or not.
Well, these days, anything's possible. This is the problem.
Yeah, that's right. Oh dear, no wonder this generation of kids are so confused.
I'm confused.
You know that in Germany there used to be like we have the DSM, which defines mental health conditions. And in Germany, they had mental health conditions which referred to children, adolescents who were confused about their sexuality and having lots of mental health issues around that. Well, they got rid of that definition and replaced it with gender dysphoria. And funnily enough, it's the same numbers of kids.
Right. Gee. All right. Well, I think we're at the end. Any last comments, Jill? Any last words before we end our panel?
Well, I'd like to say on a positive note, I've been really enjoying the actual athletes at the Olympics. I was on tenterhooks yesterday with Hayden Wilde and Alex Yee at the ending of that triathlon.
I don't even know who you're talking about. That's how disconnected I am.
Hayden Wilde is our New Zealand triathlete who just got pipped at the post, literally.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And, of course, Simone Biles, who's come back from serious mental health issues in Tokyo and just blitzing it in the women's gymnastics.
Okay, well, that's cool. That's cool. All right, Marty.
Yeah, I'm a lot like you, Paul. I almost have a dogged refusal to watch sport just because I
have no interest in the Olympics. I got to say this time around, no interest at all. Sorry, yeah. No interest.
Yeah, no, it's a shame. I mean, it's always wonderful to see people at that pinnacle of human possibility and keeping on pushing it. But yeah, no, it just with the various things going on around France and Paris and the opening ceremony, I'll probably look at a highlights reel, but all the best to those New Zealand athletes, and I hope they do well. And
one of my daughters is in Paris next week. I might ask her how it feels, actually.
Yeah, France is in real trouble, and Europe. Yeah, there's a lot of instability, isn't there? I mean, one of the things that we haven't gotten around to talking about was the Venezuelan election fraud.
Well, let's talk a bit about that because that's interesting, and I don't want to hog what you're about to say, but at first I thought, oh, yeah, typical socialist steals the elections. But actually, this could be one of these, color revolutions going on from outside.
Yeah, well, you just don't know. Although, you know, if you look at the record of that particular party in Venezuela, they've had that arc of movement towards socialism, which starts off with free healthcare and ends up with the police shooting unarmed citizens. And, you know, if you look at the exit polls, Gonzalez won 65% of the vote. This is per the Edison research and reported in the Wall Street Journal, whereas Maduro had 31, but Maduro won the election 51.2% to Gonzalez's 40. And I'm suspicious about the polls showing Kamala Harris ahead of Trump in swing states.
Yeah,
I'm suspicious about the poll in New Zealand showing that 75% of Kiwis were concerned about the prospect of a Trump presidency. I do wonder whether there is systemic election fraud around the world, and
that's 75% of people who watch One News.
Well, I mean, yeah, the research.
Or listen to RNZ.
Yeah, it was a Talbot Mills research, so you know, that is the Labour Party's pollsters, but all the same. It was reported as such.
Jill, do you want to opine on that Venezuelan situation before we're done?
Oh, no, I just wanted to comment on the Trump-Kamala Harris situation. I think there's a lot of people in the States who didn't want to vote for either Biden or Trump.
He fixed the economy. He stopped the war. You might not like him, but he was successful. End of story, right?
Trump?
Yeah.
He's a convicted felon.
Oh, yeah, okay, too much One News again, too much One News again.
Yeah, but...
it's a setup, it's a lawfare setup, right?
Oh, well. I don't support Trump, and I don't think probably about half of Americans don't, but they didn't support Biden either. He was clearly...
Well, he stole his election, so that's how he won.
He's definitely suffering from, if not, what do you call it?
Dementia.
Dementia, that's the one.
When you start forgetting things, Jill.
I know. It's that disease that's beginning with A. Alzheimer's, I was thinking of. I was going to say, if not Alzheimer's, some form of dementia.
Well, they've never said Alzheimer's. They've always said dementia, haven't they?
Well, Parkinson's is the one that they often say he looks like he has. But, yeah, I mean, his cognitive decline's been remarkable if you look at I saw a progressive series of him talking. And my mother, I've said this before, has got dementia. And she's right on the final stretch of that, which is terrible.
She's qualified to run America then.
Yeah. Well, what's the joke? You can wrap your own Christmas presents. You're always meeting new people and you can wrap your own Christmas presents.
Okay.
But yeah, I recognize a lot of his speech and movement patterns from that. But, you know, again, you've got to zoom back and think, well, who wants that to happen? Who's it just fine with? And that interview you did with Naomi Wolf was fascinating for that.
Oh, wasn't that? It was quite chilling, actually.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, I think we're at the end. Jill from the Women's Rights Party, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. Great to have you.
Yeah, thank you. That's my first time on Reality Check Radio.
Oh, is it? I hope you enjoyed the ride.
Yeah.
No, nice to meet you, Jill.
Yeah, thanks, Marty.
All the best. Thank you, Marty.
My pleasure. Have a great week.
And we'll do it again in a week. See you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye now.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.